Spotify now allows you to rate the podcasts that you love on the app itself. So if you enjoy listening to Stories After Dark, please give it a 5-star rating by going to the show's main page on Spotify and clicking on the rating or star icon below the podcast description. Thank you. When plans for the Manila Film Center were first unveiled in 1981, many believed that it would catapult the Philippines and its movie industry into the global stage. No expense was spared in constructing the ambitiously designed building, which included a massive auditorium and a movie archive that made use of the latest in digital technology. It was supposed to be the official national film archive the country didn't have before. Unfortunately, the cost to turn the project into a reality proved to be too steep. You're listening to Stories After Dark, a Philippine true crime and mystery podcast powered by Anchor and released exclusively on Spotify with new episodes out every week. This is the story of the Manila Film Center, the brainchild of former First Lady Imelda Marcos, which aside from $25 million worth of taxpayer money, also reportedly took the lives of over 100 construction workers as payment. Listener discretion is advised due to the graphic nature of this story. In the early 1970s, then First Lady of the Philippines Imelda Marcos became known across the globe for her lavish lifestyle and endless socializing with heads of state and international celebrities. Back then, she was named one of the richest women in the world, with her wealth speculated to be far greater than even that of the United Kingdom's Queen Elizabeth II. Imelda's life wasn't always this way though. Born Imelda Remedios Visitacion Trinidad Romualdez in San Miguel, Manila on July 2, 1929, she was the sixth of the 11 children of lawyer Vicente Orestes Romualdez. Though Imelda, nicknamed Meldy, was born into the Romualdez political dynasty from the province of Leyte, his father's branch of the clan was considered the poorest members. Vicente was a widower who remarried Imelda's mother, Remedios Trinidad. But Vicente's children from his first marriage resented him for not consulting them about Remedios, and they ended up resenting their stepmother as well. This, along with the family's declining financial conditions around 1931 to 1932, resulted in Vicente and Remedios separating. Though the couple eventually reconciled, Remedios moved to the garage with Imelda and the other children she bore Vicente to avoid further conflict with Vicente's children from his first marriage. As described in Carmen Navarro Pedrosa's controversial and unofficial biography of Imelda, The Untold Story of Imelda Marcos, the garage was, quote, a carport with roof, posts, and cement flooring. The flooring was barely a foot from the ground. The place was terribly humid, end quote. According to the family's helper Estrella, who stayed with Remedios and her children, quote, we had no beds in the garage, and the children and I slept together on long boards propped up by milk boxes while she, Remedios, was on the long table, end quote. Imelda had to face her family's humiliating poverty while in grade school, often being one of the students who had to apologize for late tuition payments. In 1938, Imelda's mother passed away from pneumonia, and 4 years later, in 1942, after Imelda's father Vicente's law practice declined, their family had to move from Manila back to Tacloban in Leyte, where the Romualdezes are from. Imelda graduated from high school at Holy Infant Academy in 1948, then took up education at St. Paul's College, now Divine Word University of Tacloban. Imelda taught at a local Chinese high school while she was an undergraduate student, and as she was an attractive young woman with a beautiful singing voice, she was often invited in fundraising events, town fiestas, and civic parades in their province. After graduating from college in 1952, Imelda returned to Manila reportedly with just 5 pesos in her pocket. She stayed in the mansion of her cousin, Congressman Daniel Romualdez, where her status was described as, quote, higher than servants and lower than family members as a poor relative, end quote. Danielle helped Imelda find a job as a sales girl at P.E. Domingo, a music store in Escolta. But when Imelda's father, Vicente, learned of Imelda's job during one of his visits in Manila, he asked Danielle to find her another job as he thought her current one was too demeaning. Danielle used his connections to find work for Imelda under Braulio Hipuna, the chief clerk of the Philippine Central Bank's intelligence division. Another cousin, Loreto Ramos, introduced Imelda to Adoracion Reyes, who helped her win a scholarship to study music at Philippine Women's University's College of Music and Fine Arts, where Reyes was a professor. Reyes also helped Imelda join the Miss Manila contest in 1953, but after failing to solicit enough votes to get her the coveted title, she and Reyes used a connection at City Hall to protest the results. This led to Imelda representing Manila at the International Fair Exposition's Miss Philippines pageant with the originally declared winner of the Miss Manila contest. Though Imelda didn't win the Miss Philippines title, she was given the honorary title of Muse of Manila by Manila Mayor Arsenio Lacson. Imelda was married to Ferdinand Marcos in 1954, and when she became First Lady of the Philippines in 1965, she had successfully shed her poverty-stricken past and would later send bulldozers to destroy the garage where she grew up, as it was a bitter reminder of her childhood. Imelda wanted to do the same thing for her country, which was improve its image to both citizens and foreigners. Some of her early projects were the beautification of Paco Park and Fort Santiago, for which she spent 1 million and 24 million pesos respectively in taxpayer money, which is more than 2 billion pesos or around 45 million US dollars today. After her husband declared martial law in the country, Imelda oversaw the construction of costly projects such as the Philippine Heart Center, Lung Center of the Philippines, Philippine International Convention Center, Cultural Center of the Philippines or CCP, and Coconut Palace, all of which she hoped would make Manila appear more sophisticated to foreigners. In 1974, the Marcos administration struck a deal with the organizers of the Miss Universe pageant to host the event in Manila and thereby promote the Philippines to a global audience. There was pressure to put on an unforgettable show, as the pageant hadn't been staged in Asia before and the crown had just been won a year earlier by Miss Philippines Margarita Margi Moran. To prepare Manila for its hosting duties, construction of the Folk Arts Theater in the Cultural Center of the Philippines complex was ramped up to seat the 10,000 people that would attend the 1974 Miss Universe pageant. The theater, designed by National Artist for Architecture Leandro Locsin, was finished in a record 77 days. In January 1981, Imelda continued her quest to make the Philippines beautiful and relevant by approving a proposal to build the Manila Film Center, a building also in the CCP complex that she hoped would enable Manila to rival Cannes as the world capital of cinema. It didn't matter that the construction project would end up costing Filipino taxpayers more than 25 million US dollars, money that was rumored to have been originally earmarked to create a new wing for the Philippine General Hospital. Putting Manila on the map took priority for Imelda, and no price was too high if it would make this happen. Imelda claimed there was to be no loss, as the festival was projected to bring in millions of dollars of tourist revenue, enough to recover the $1 million cost of the festival, plus the cost of the film center. According to Imelda, quote, $18 million can be recovered in 4 to 5 days of the festival, end quote. An all-star team was assembled to oversee the project. Ramon Ignacio, the senior technology officer at the Technology Resource Center, was responsible for conducting a feasibility study and coming up with the building's concept. And Betty Benitez, the wife of Deputy Minister of Home Settlement Jose Conrado Benitez, was appointed as project supervisor. Plans for the Manila Film Center included, among its many features, a 360-degree theater that would show both historical and present images of the country's tourist spots so that future generations would be able to appreciate their beauty. The building would also be home to a department handling a film financing and loan program which would fund independent Filipino film directors. Other features were a film database and information system, a filmmaking and blow-up laboratory, and viewing rooms that would be reserved for members of the Board of Censors. Additionally, the proposed Filipino Film Archive would use digital technology, which at the time was still completely unheard of. While Ramon Ignacio's vision for the Manila Film Center was well received, it ultimately proved to be nearly impossible. In the end, only two of his ideas made it to the final building plans, and those were the auditorium and the archives. The Manila Film Center was set to open in 1 year on January 18, 1982. Architect Froilan Hong modeled the building structure after the Parthenon, a temple built by the ancient Greeks to honor the goddess Athena. Hong's ambitious design, however, meant that at least 4,000 laborers working three shifts around the clock were required for the project to finish on time. But even with this large number of workers, the construction timetable still needed to be sped up. Things that usually took about 6 weeks to finish were reportedly completed in just 3 days. Unsurprisingly, this rushed schedule meant unsafe work practices and laborers cutting corners. All these tragically came to a head at around 3 in the morning on November 17, 1981, just 2 months before the Manila Film Center's opening. Scaffolding on the building's fourth floor collapsed due to too much quick-drying cement being poured on each floor without waiting for the layers to dry. Workers were crushed underneath, with some men ending up impaled on steel bars while others were buried alive in the rubble. There were also a few who found themselves trapped in the cement, unable to escape as the substance hardened around the bottom half of their bodies. A total of 168 construction workers reportedly lost their lives that morning, though the actual number of casualties remains a mystery to this day. Legend has it that when news of the accident reached Imelda Marcos, her attention immediately turned to the tight deadline of the project. She allegedly believed that it would take too much time and effort to recover the corpses, leading to delays that would force her to push back the film center's proposed opening night. To appease the First Lady, Betty Benitez was said to have ordered the rest of the construction workers to pour cement over their colleagues. Many believe that several of these workers could have still lived if only they had been rescued. Media and rescue teams were only allowed inside the building after about 10 hours had passed. Unfortunately, by then, the victims were already buried underneath the freshly poured cement. Despite this terrible tragedy, construction of the Manila Film Center continued, still with the same rush timeline. The cement was allegedly still wet when the red carpet was rolled out on January 18, 1982 for the building's opening night and the first ever Manila International Film Festival. Though some of the female guests would later find streaks of cement on the hems of their gowns, they were oblivious to the fact of what else was underneath their feet, and they enjoyed the many spectacles that First Lady Imelda Marcos had prepared for the evening. The event was a huge success, with the New York Times referring to it as, quote, all-out spectacular, end quote. It was filled with A-list Hollywood celebrities and key industry figures such as Brooke Shields, Priscilla Presley, Robert Duvall, and George Hamilton, who attended as guests of First Lady Imelda Marcos. It didn't matter that stars like Christopher Reeve, Faye Dunaway, Jodie Foster, and Zsa Zsa Gabor couldn't attend, or that Charlton Heston and Sherry Lansing, head of 20th Century Fox, were said to have cancelled because of a letter from the April 6 Youth Movement and Freedom Fighters of the Philippines suggesting that it wouldn't be safe to attend. The more than 300 guests that came to the opening ceremonies and the films from 39 countries shown throughout the 12-day festival were more than enough to declare the production a success. By the end of the festival, an estimated $20 million worth of films had been bought and sold, including 30 Filipino movies worth $500,000, with an action movie titled For Your Height Only, starring the actor Weng Weng, getting the highest sales for the Filipino films. There was a media blackout imposed upon the Manila Film Center tragedy throughout the Marcos regime, which meant that the accident was never made public. There were rumors of it, however, which persisted during martial law, but Filipinos only became truly aware of the tragedy in 1986 after Ferdinand Marcos was ousted. Video footage of the tragedy emerged, showing a man buried in cement from his waist down, surrounded by volunteers who were singing Christmas songs to prevent him from going into shock and losing consciousness. Unfortunately, rescuers only arrived after several hours had passed, and he was already dead by then. The same footage also showed stretchers with bodies that appeared to be covered in cement. The Manila Film Center had since been rumored to be haunted and cursed, with one of the very first rumors involving Imelda Marcos' daughter, Aimee. Aimee was reportedly told by a local fortune teller that she would lose her life the minute she stepped foot inside the Manila Film Center. Because of this, her parents called on Catholic priests and even albularios and Chinese folk healers to carry out rituals that would rid the place of evil spirits. According to some sources, these rites started almost immediately, about 2 hours after the accident. At approximately 5 a.m. on January 18, 1982, a group of Igorots was said to have been escorted inside the building to perform one of their ancient rituals that involved sacrificing pigs and chickens as they called on any lingering ghosts to cross over to the next life. Present at the ritual was an anxious Aimee Marcos, who was required to eat the sacrificed meat so she would be protected from vengeful spirits. Also in attendance was Nena Benigno, daughter of former press secretary and columnist Teddy Benigno, who remembered Aimee telling her that she had asked Via Mare restaurant to cater the event, but the Igorots would only be given the meat from the animals they had slaughtered. Despite these rituals, strange experiences were still had by those preparing for the film festival. Usherettes from exclusive girls' schools reported an odd smell coming from backstage, and they also told their teachers that they felt cold air blowing on their skin while inside the building. Building workers who were given anting antings or amulets for protection reportedly saw their dead colleagues after the accident, and according to other stories, some of the festival guests saw them too. The hauntings persisted even after the Manila International Film Festival ended. During Cory Aquino's presidency, the Department of Foreign Affairs temporarily moved its passport processing operations to the Manila Film Center. Employees working the night shift reported hearing the clacking sound of typewriters, even though none of them were using typewriters at the time. A couple of years after the tragedy, a group of psychics with Tony Perez of Ateneo de Manila University tried to come in contact with the spirits in the film center. Perez and his group claimed to have sensed the presence of over 100 spirits but failed to have direct contact with them. Perhaps most eerie was the freak car accident that claimed the life of Betty Benitez a few months after the tragedy. A psychic who was sent to the Manila Film Center said that the spirits were whispering, quote, "Betty is with us," end quote, leading many to believe that the vengeful spirits entombed within the Manila Film Center caused the car accident that killed Benitez. Despite the reported success of the first ever Manila International Film Festival, the Manila Film Center itself never fully recovered from the tragedy. Almost immediately after the festival, then-Philippine Prime Minister Cesar Virata canceled a $5 million subsidy that had initially been allotted to it. To ensure that her project would survive, Imelda was forced to create a government agency that would eventually morph into the Movie and Television Review and Classification Board, or MTRCB. To establish the agency, Ferdinand Marcos passed Presidential Decree 1986, which also stated that all films included in the festival were exempted from censorship. This meant that the Manila Film Center was allowed to show pornography, which soon filled its seats with droves of men eager to watch sexy films. But even those ticket sales weren't enough to cover the debts incurred by the project. After the Marcoses were ousted, Rostans took back all the furniture and paintings inside the building. The Manila Film Center was abandoned after the 1990 Luzon earthquake following reports of structural damage to the west side of the building. In 2001, CCP President Armita Rufino announced a full rehabilitation program for the film center. The building's architect, Froilan Hong, was part of the strategic planning session on the structure's renovation, which had an estimated cost of approximately 300 million pesos, which would be more than double in today's money. After the renovation was completed, Amazing Philippines produced in the film center a series of lip-synced musical numbers collectively called The Amazing Show starting in October 2001. Their lease expired in 2009 and the Philippine Senate considered moving to the film center from the Government Service Insurance System or GSIS building nearby. A 3-hour fire damaged the Manila Film Center in 2013, and the Senate's decision to transfer to the building was put on hold the following year. The Manila Film Center still stands as of this recording, and there continue to be whispers of the place being haunted. Many who have walked down its halls have insisted that they saw shadowy figures, heard strange sounds, felt spine-chilling sensations, and caught whiffs of odd smells. Some of the ghosts have been said to even be haunting nearby buildings. In one story, a man was approached by a stranger who gave him a calling card and asked him to call his family. The stranger asked the man to tell his family that he was alright but was going away, but when the man made the call, the voice on the other end of the line explained that the stranger was already dead and that his body had been buried in the film center. There have been documentary teams who have tried to investigate both the tragedy and the building's hauntings. In a 2005 episode of GMA Network's Eyewitness, they found no official reports of the tragedy with CCP, nor the Pasay Police under whose jurisdiction the Manila Film Center belonged. One supposed survivor, a man named Eddie, claimed that all the bodies had been dug up from the area, which seemed to agree with the project's contractor, Eliodoro Ponyo, who said that all the workers who had died in the accident had been buried honorably. The eyewitness team, however, found no family in their research claiming that they had a relative left buried beneath the film center, nor did they find anyone still looking for someone missing ever since the tragedy. The team also didn't have any ghost encounters in the building, though of course that doesn't mean that the place has no lingering spirits wanting to take revenge on those who buried them alive. Thank you for listening to Stories After Dark, a Spotify exclusive powered by Anchor. This story was co-written by Kayla De Leon and was narrated and produced by me, Derek. Music is by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Stay tuned next week for a new episode, and to make sure you're updated about the show, please follow Stories After Dark on your Spotify app as well as on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you'd like to see the references used for this episode, suggest cases, send personal stories, or further support the show, you can go to storiesafterdark.ph for more information. All of the links are in the episode description.